Well, welcome back, everyone. Pickers Market, episode 108. Tyler. Yeah! Big number. Hey. Tyler, Lisa, myself. Lisa's already kind of all whipped up, so this ought to be another interesting show. So she's got computer problems, and nothing seems to be kind of working right. So hopefully today gets all straightened out for her. So
thank you for your thoughts, Keith. Appreciate it.
Seems a little sarcastic, huh? All right, let's jump in before Lisa really goes off the rails here. Two truths and a lie. We'll do again. We've talked about this a lot, but it's worth talking about. We're going to talk a little bit about AI, CapEx. We'll get to a little SpaceX talk too here today. That'll be kind of, I think, kind of fun, exciting, because I get 3-4 calls a day. I'm sure you guys are the same, of how we can invest, and we'll touch on that a little bit here in shortly. But finally got some details today out of what potential price and stuff like that, which I thought was interesting. All right. Don't want to jump too far ahead. Two truths and a lie. AI CapEx spend. We talked about this in the big numbers. So I'm going to give you an ABC. Tell me what the lie is. Amazon is the faster riser proportionally of the Mag 7 and CapEx spend. That's A. B, the hyperscalers that dominate the AI spend, Amazon, Microsoft, and Google, account for about 75% of the spend. C, Apple's guiding for $13 billion in CapEx spend in 2026. There's your three options. I'll start with Lisa, since she seems like she was on fire this morning. So any thoughts on these, Lisa?
I think B is correct. Okay. I believe, yes.
That was the hyperscaler spend by the three.
I'm missing Meta here. I don't know. Where's Meta? I think I'm missing.
I put Amazon, Microsoft, and Google. I did not put Meta in there.
Right. And that kind of weirds me out a little bit, because I think Meta should be in there to account for 75%. That's why I'm going with the lie on this. It already freaks me out that Meta is not in there. That's why I'm saying it's the lie. Long story short.
Boom.
Give it a shot.
The other two, you're just going to completely ignore, or no value add?
Are you saying...
No clarifications. Pick here.
What's your question?
The hyperscalers that dominate AI spend, are you saying all of AI spend in CapEx? Amazon, Microsoft, and Google?
Hyperscalers.
Out of the hyperscalers?
Yes.
Okay. I think I'm going with B as well. I think A, Amazon is the fastest rise proportionally. They were. I think they're slowing down. Apple, I thought I saw something yesterday that they were $13 billion CapEx spend for this year. So I'll go with B.
Got you both. The A was the incorrect. Amazon's not the fastest growing proportionally. It's actually Meta, kind of what Lisa was kind of beating
on
the bush.
But where's Meta in answer B, Keith?
Is Meta considered a hyperscaler? I don't know. So this is straight out of Claude, if you guys really want to know. What I thought was interesting was...
Did you fact check?
No, it's fact checked. Don't worry.
It's Claude, ChatGPT fact checked.
The CapEx for Meta, it is growing the fastest. It would jump from like 45 to 125 or 135, billions. That's a huge jump. Even Amazon had a big jump, but they already were spending. So that's kind of, you guys were kind of touching on it. And then what did really surprise me is Apple's only at 13.
I was too. When I first read it this morning, I was like, okay, C is the lie. Because like when we talk about like 700 billion total spend, and then Apple, I know Apple is the laggard here, right? Because it's not a hyperscaler and it has a little bit of a different AI built out story to it. But I was like, only 13 billion, that still with all of that background, it sounds low. But then it freaked me out that Meta was not in B, so I jumped the gun. But C would have been wrong anyway, so was not thinking about A.
No, you're right. That only 13 billion compared to everybody else has spent in hundreds.
Out of 700? Hundreds,
I think Google's like 180 or something like that. Yeah. And then the full, you kind of touched on it, the full CapEx spend for the group for in 2026. Now this is increasing rapidly, is almost 750 billion.
Is that like all of them?
All of them. That's everybody in there. And then for the 2027, we still got another 100 plus billion added.
I've heard like that Wall Street consensus even calls for 1 trillion in 27.
Yeah. So this is
another like what?
So if we want to go back in time of what our predictions were completely wrong, that was one that I thought at some point in time we would already be plateauing, kind of going sideways in this CapEx spend. I think those numbers are getting ridiculous, and it's something's going to happen. It's material. We won't be able to produce. There'll be some kind of issue, you know, manufacturing or whatever.
I was reading there's a part of the morning news this morning from FactSet was the concern now is this just pure supply constraint for data centers.
Mm.
Sure, you could spend $800 billion.
That's what I mean. How do you build a facility? How much equipment can you jam into a building?
Also the power and all of that small stuff that you need. But yeah.
That's where I don't quite... I think these numbers are directionally right, but I think they're going to be off because at some point we're going to bottleneck.
2-3 years for the data center.
Yeah.
So where does the $800 billion go?
And the stocks are acting like it's coming tomorrow. So the data center semiconductor.
Yeah.
Then I've been doing this a long time. It's this recent move of coming in every day, seeing a semiconductor up 10-20%. You get an announcement. Oh, this will be the next $1 trillion company. And the stock's up like 30%.
I mean, Eaton said on their call, the CEO was like, we have 11-year backlog for data center.
That's insane.
This reminds me of the start getting to that. We prior to this, we were talking about the fiber kind of layout and all the black fiber, the dark fiber never came about, and it took those stocks just went,
but it's destroyed. Also interesting, like with all of the data center build out, and they get kind of grabbing land left and right wherever they can and wherever they built these. But it's interesting because it's getting a lot more scrutinizing from the public that they want to have these in their back door, in their back, you know, yards, kind of these data centers and protesting and all of that. So that's certainly.
Yeah, really it's going, not my bag. It's kind of like the, you know, the windmills.
Yeah.
Now I'll jump into, I thought another interesting thing about AI spend and kind of where it's coming from. Morgan Stanley, JP Morgan projecting $1.5 trillion in bond issuance in the next couple of years from AI. Isn't that, that's a big, big number. The fixed income guys got to be drooling and the bond guys actually get something fun and exciting. And I mean, just from actually being able to get some pretty exciting stuff. Yeah, at some point in time, it's a little bit too big of a number.
What my concern would be is, so a lot of these, like if you look at private credit, we're hearing about all the gating that's popping up is because all these guys invested in software companies.
This data center going to be the next issue? Like
that's for what that, right? That's, yeah. So like, are they going to be more hesitant to actually buy these bonds?
Yeah. Well, bonds are a little bit different than private. I mean, a little bit more
and
front and center, but yeah.
Yeah, I mean, you're higher in the credit stack, right? I mean, you pay your salaries, you pay expenses, then you pay the bonds, right? So, but at the same time, same thing with private credit. I mean, theoretically, the software companies pay the salaries, pay the expenses, pay the bondholders, but your private credit funds are just getting destroyed.
Yeah.
So are they going to be more hesitant to, and it could be as simple as instead of paying me, you know, 1% spread on treasuries, you pay me 1.5. That could be the story. I don't know, but 1.5 trillion seems
a big number.
Aggressive.
Yeah, I mean, so we're seeing like Google, for example. I think I mentioned that they're going to do $180 billion in CapEx. So it's like, okay, these guys were cash flow pretty strong. Now they're issuing debt. Mm-hmm. And the one thing that surprised me this week, the headline was Google's raising stock. Did you guys see that?
Mm-hmm.
So it's the first time in 20 years, right? That's back when they're a tiny company because they've been more buying back stock, right? Because, you know, to keep the float lower and now they're actually reversing. So I think this is an interesting
And I think it's interesting because they had like $70 billion in share buybacks last year and then a year before. And now they're issuing $80 billion. I mean, the stock didn't react very positively.
No, it bounced back recently, but I'm surprised too. Yeah.
It makes me nervous. It's interesting because we see a lot of these debt issuance from Meta and all of that, where there was a lot of financial engineering going on to keep that off the balance sheet for the data centers and all of that. So that is nothing new, but I think Google is the first one of the big boys who actually issue shares now because the rest kind of, did it with bonds so far as well as Google, but now it's like, hey, I think it's the first time like investors really see, okay, there's a shift from getting, you know, capital back to investors to has like, hey, we just need to invest and we go the other way around now. Which is interesting that it's the first of the big ones who kind of jumps the gun in really issuing shares again.
Well, let me ask you this. So you're traditionally a growth guy.
Mm-hmm.
That sounds like a traditional growth company to me.
It does.
They've found, take out what Google's done. Take out the company itself. If you were looking at Google on pure AI and the future of technology, what they could potentially be doing, would that be a good sign to you that they're taking out or issuing shares to get capital to invest in
and not this using AI it for thing?
Yeah. When you're a small company, certainly, I start to question the size of this company, the cash flow that they generated historically for the last 20 years and not having to go back to the markets, that you would think you have enough dry powder mm-hmm. cash capital allocation decisions to make these investments. But to your point, okay, now we're maybe in a new layer of growth. And that's what the market's telling you, that mm-hmm. that's where we're at. And generally, again, when they're smaller, younger companies, I don't mind issuing. But at some point in time, you start slowing that growth a little bit, then you get your cash flow, which is good, right? Ultimately, mm-hmm. that's what you're paying for at some point in yep. time is the cash flow of a company. Now you're just putting your end date, you're putting your farther your investment thesis out longer. So that could be an interesting data point. I just thought it was a little shocking that it's been 20 years since they've had to yeah. issue mm-hmm. stock. So what do you think of it?
I just think it's interesting that if you take out the size of the company, if you take out what Google or Alphabet, their core business is, like if you take that out and you just look at this from a different lens of why are they doing this? And does this provide them the growth that a traditional growth company would have? I think it's actually an investment thesis to get into it because of that. Because I mean, there's some pretty smart people at Google.
Yeah.
They've figured it out for the last however long they've been public. So if they've found this new opportunity, and part of it, I think, is they're forced into spending this kind of money just because if they don't spend it, the stock's going to fall. Right.
Look at Apple. That's why it surprises me that Apple, you know, it's kind of like everybody else can yeah. spend like crazy. And all of a sudden Apple's like, well, we're 13 billion. You guys are 180. I mean, that's
what? Yeah.
But
times.
I think everyone understood by now that Apple is probably not in the forefront of well, the whole build out because they were like late in the game to begin with.
Well, and then Apple it was kind of with OpenAI.
Yeah. Then they were going to do their own chipset stuff like that. So that they are kind of spending, but I think they kind of
more under the radar than the
put
others.
Put their toe in and then yeah. they're kind of like, oh, this isn't
the expectations are at least lower, much lower for Apple because no one is really expecting a whole lot from that side. Yeah.
So I just think, Like if Google doesn't, part of it is you're right. Apple's never spent, right? Whereas Google, Meta, Amazon, Microsoft have all jumped headfirst into this and they've mm-hmm. started spending. And as soon as Microsoft says, you know what, instead of, what was their CapEx for this year? 150?
Yeah.
If they're like, we're going to go from 150 to 75. What do you think happens to the stock?
Probably gets hit.
Yeah.
So we're in a weird time. I mean, so I think
they're stuck between like a rock and a hard place because they basically have to spend. But I also think these companies see this enormous opportunity of AI and what it can do for them. If you are the first mover, we see it in the ETF world all the time. The first ETF company that comes out with XYZ ETF that is in a new area of the market, they gain all the assets.
Yeah.
So just like OpenAI, everybody went to ChatGPT. Now Anthropic is kind of overstepped them, but it took a while. But it's whoever gets to that next step is going to be the winner. And so you have to spend to get there. And so for Google to see this opportunity and say, you know what, let's issue some stock to get some capital so we can go truly invest in this and try and get there first. I think that's the opportunity for Google.
Yeah, we'll see. I mean, just remember Google, even like a year and a half ago, they were kind of like, oh my goodness.
Put to the dead. And yeah.
Search is dead. AI is going to take it over, right? Yeah. And the stock just got hit pretty aggressively.
Their initial model was awful.
Yeah, and their initial model was awful. Now it seems like
they're in the forefront of the Mag 7.
Yeah, well, I think the general consumer kind of still search they've been trained to go to Google, and it's now it's, you know,
now you got Gemini in the top right.
Top right, right? It's like, it's a pretty powerful tool to get everybody's mindset.
We have Claude Enterprise, and Binger still uses Gemini.
Yeah.
So,
but that's another whole thing. When you use Enterprise, we find out as a firm, it's, you start doing some pretty
expensive
mm-hmm. and some computational stuff. It's all of a sudden, boom, this is your budget and you've run it, right? Well, reminds me of my kid's phone bill when I, you know, was paying for that. I was like, all right, kids, get off the phone. We're about maxed out on minutes here.
Yeah, data is gone.
That was part of the other, like in the Facts That's Morning thing, like news article was, not only is there concern for the data center supply, but it's also how much are the companies going to be limiting on tokens? Because that's like ChatGPT initially, you could just use as much as you want. Mm-hmm. And then all of a sudden the actual cost of energy comes into play and they start mm-hmm. limiting it. And so every company limits it now and you got to pay, but then you reach your limits. So like I have Enterprise for cloud, but then I also have personal cloud. Mm-hmm. And so if I do too much in my personal cloud, you can set a budget each month for how much you want to spend on tokens. And so it'll, once you pass your limit for like the pro plan, it'll start eating into the, basically like,
banking some extra money. Is that what you're doing?
So think about when you load money up onto like a Starbucks mm-hmm. card or Chick-fil-A app or anything like that. It's the same concept. Like you basically load up $75 extra onto this, onto Claude.
Yep.
And then if you go past your pro limit, it'll start eating into that budget.
It's amazing the stuff you can do with it, and it makes you more efficient, but there is a cost that mm-hmm. I think we'll start finding mm-hmm. out this more, this limiting to at least touch on it, the energy, the infrastructure built around
funny
it.
Funny things, like some companies are figuring out now that like these tokens are all in all more expensive than the actual employee.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it probably gets cheaper depending
on what you're doing. Yeah.
But yeah.
No, because they're.
But I think that's where XPUs and ASICs comes into play.
Mm-hmm. Oh, who plays in that space, Tyler?
Oh, yeah. Glad you asked.
is it Broadcom?
It's Broadcom.
And did it?
Speaking of which, tonight.
Oh, let's
mentioned in the podcast again.
That's a little off topic. I wasn't going to talk about that, but let's spend a minute here quick on kind of what do you see for the projection of Broadcom tonight, Tyler?
Give him the stage, Keith. Yeah.
I mean, I think it's going to be a very good report. We saw Marvell last night. They were talking about ASICs as well.
Mm-hmm.
So I think it's going to be, I would imagine at some point, maybe it's this quarter, next quarter, they announce something with OpenAI. They're kind of the last bigger company to announce a relationship with OpenAI or mm-hmm. some type of investment there. So I think something like that will happen, which I think will get the market happy. But yeah, I think their ASICs AI revenue is going to be, what were they last quarter? 89%, I think. 86. I think they're going to be somewhere in that ballpark again, would be my guess.
It's not a bad growth rate, huh?
Not at all. So yeah, I think it's going to be a good report. CNBC did a analysis on the option trading yesterday, and no, this is not a recommendation.
Don't worry. After we're airing, actually, probably at, well, no, not the video might be up before the
video will be up before the report
for
the quarter.
We have it, fortunately, in the disclosures that nothing is a recommendation here.
This is not a. But CNBC did analysis of like the options trading yesterday after the close, and the option analysis was that the option market expected Broadcom to move higher than 7% by Friday after the. After the report.
Lisa, do you have, we just leave it at that, or you had any words of wisdom on Broadcom? Should we just
jump? I love Broadcom too.
Oh.
Tyler
converted her.
Yeah, he converted me to the cult. So I have it in my PA, so I'm happy about that.
All right.
She's a Broadcom holder.
It works great. Tyler converted me. But Tyler, also say, for what of our portfolios would it be great when Broadcom reports a great quarter?
It'll be good for G50. It'll mm-hmm. be good for Core Select.
I think it's good for everything, pretty much. I think we own it all over the place.
The endowments, it'll be good for Discovery.
We prefer it to go up than down.
Yes.
Leave it at that. All right. Now let's talk about something that we... all getting questions on it. We see nonstop 24/7. If you're watching any of the financial news work networks or even other networks, SpaceX, IPO, long awaited. I think it's June 12th. I think it's the final date. So again, I'm the old guy here. Been doing this 30 plus years. I've never seen anything like it. The hype, the questions, people that aren't even investors. Oh, how do I get invested in the SpaceX? The market cap, wide range. I'll just kind of lay out some early metrics here. It was 1.5 trillion to 2.5 trillion. Mm-hmm. So that IPO is it's going to put in the top 10 of these big meg seven names that we've been talking about without even being public, without even seeing financials. And we have a little bit of historical stuff, but kind of projections. Like normally you see a run rate and you can kind of make some good guesstimates going forward how things are. So this is kind of interesting that it's going to IPO that size. And then this morning they finally came out and actually gave you a little more details of they're going to raise about $75 billion. And so that equates to about 1.7. Again, the whole, when the company goes public, they only sell a small part, you know, 10% of the company, 20, whatever they want, how much capital they need. And then they retain the rest. So they're going to sell 555 million shares at $135. So that equates to 1.75 trillion. Lisa, thoughts on SpaceX? We finally got some numbers, kind of the hype. What are you hearing? And kind of,
I mean, it's interesting because there are also whispers about Tesla might be integrated in SpaceX once it's public and all of that. I have not 30 years on my back like Keith, but I have not seen anything like that from the hype, like from ordinary, you know, investors that are not really too deep into the weeds of IPOs and all of that stuff or asking how they are getting into that, which is interesting, which is also not as easy to get into it beforehand. No. I mean, it's like, there's a lot of, it's not that the shares are not publicly traded yet. So you cannot only go out there and it's like, oh, I want such and such, you know, and then have it in your Schwab account and it trades. Like it works a little bit differently. You usually have to bring a lot more capital. Mm-hmm. And it's also not as easy to grab your hands on it, especially with that craziness. I was just thinking back and taking a little bit time of thinking to prior IPOs, the largest in history. And I can remember the last one that at least had hype, at least in Europe, when I was back living there, was in 2019, which is also by now still the largest IPO ever, which was Saudi Aramco. Mm. That was in 2019. And I don't know how it was here for you guys, but we had a lot of hype about Saudi Aramco IPO in Europe, or at least in kind of my area there. But also more among the finance people, and not really among, like, you know,
the general population.
So anything like SpaceX, but at least a little bit, you know, where, it's still the largest IPO so far. And then Alibaba 2014 was before, and then SoftBank in 2018, the third largest. So yeah, it was interesting. But as you said, that amount of questions and how to get in and that frenzy, sure makes for some interesting first trading days.
It will. Tyler, just thoughts and questions you're getting and kind of how, you know, the question we get, you can probably answer it because you've done a little bit of this, is how do we get invested in now, today, pre-IPO? You want to talk a little bit about one way at least that you've found a way to doing it?
Oh, yeah. So there's a few funds out there. There's a interval fund, and then there's one or two ETFs that you can buy that have holdings in what they call a special purpose vehicle. So the one that we recently bought in the Digital Discovery was an ETF called, the ticker is NASA, NASA.
That helps the ticker.
Clever, wasn't it?
Yeah.
But
it's interesting that it's still available.
I know. Yeah.
Sorry.
Yeah. What? The ticker. Lisa and I are hung up on the ticker. That's the ticker was still available.
Yeah. That was kind of.
So there's ways that you can do it. And the way the ETF structure works is they hold it inside of the ETF, just like a normal stock would. The ETF would hold an underlying stock. But what's interesting is the special purpose vehicle is marketed at NAV, or at cost, not at cost, which is what they bought into the special purpose vehicle at. And so once SpaceX IPOs, then the fund starts, the special purpose vehicle starts trading, and they have to hold it for, I think it's the one inside NASA is 30 days.
I think that's a couple. We've explored some other ones in 30 days. Seems like it's a pretty
And then after that 30 days, then the ETF gets the shares that they're
allocated
to for SpaceX. So, it's a really interesting one. The amount of questions, I always had this understanding that everybody had a general idea of how IPOs work. If it's a private company, so you can't just like get shares
it, but that's not
of a private company and then have it for when it starts trading public. Like, so it's been an interesting experience to understand that aspect of it. That
a lot of people just don't
necessarily know how the IPO process works. But I think it's going to be, you're talking 1.75 trillion. What they said that they thought the price was going to be $150 for a share.
135 as of
today. 135 this morning.
They bring it down?
Yeah, a little bit.
Here's my guesstimate is that this thing, once it actually, so IPO price is not the market price, is the other thing that we have to remember. Is the IPO price is what SpaceX sells their shares to the institutional investors at. So to raise that $75 billion, they sell the however many shares at $135 per share to the institutional investors, or
they're indicated
whoever they allocate it to. And then they fill out their order book, and then the shares actually go public, and that's when it starts trading. And what I think is going to happen is that 135 is going to jump to 200. I mean, this is just a guesstimate here, but like just the pure demand and speculation around this IPO. And I think it's going to be the same thing for Anthropic, OpenAI, like the pure demand for it from the retail side, not necessarily the institutionals, but the retail side is significant. And I think this thing's going to run up the first day or two. And then I'd be worried after that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's interesting. So you explained it well, how the actual process works. The other thing I'd add is, so the book runners, the guys that are kind of gathering all the demand, are Goldman Sachs and Morgan Stanley. What they want to do and what SpaceX wants to do is, like, if they're pricing at 135, they don't necessarily want it to go jump to 200
because they
could have gotten more, right? So there's a trick into it.
So the whole IPO process is like, you're talking to, so Goldman is the book runner on this one. Mm-hmm. So Goldman will be calling out to the different institutional investors, how many shares do you want? And they'll start tweaking the price of like what people are willing to pay for it. So I think that 135, I bet the IPO price probably goes back to,
it's probably higher than that
150, 160.
That 135 is probably my starting point. And I think that's probably too low, because the company doesn't, if say for example, that where you think it's going to open at 200, the company would rather price it at like 1. You want the stock to go up a little bit on the IPO. Yeah. I mean, ideally,
you don't want it to go up 100%.
No,
but you want it to go up.
Just an indication 15, that it was a good
20%.
That means probably. If it goes up that 15 to 20%, that means the book runner, Goldman Sachs,
did a good job.
The company's probably happy because they're maximizing their profit on that opening day. And then you got to remember that,
because the higher the price, the less shares.
Yes. And then on top of that, they still own 85-90% privately.
Yeah.
Right. So they want to have a good looking open. You don't want to price it at 135 and it opens at 100. That just looks bad. So it'll be fascinating. And I think you're right that investors, how do I get a hold of this? Well, just think about, how do you invest in a small private company in your town or city of Bob's Tire Shop? You can't.
You don't.
I
mean, there's ways to do it, but.
Yeah. And there's the thing we didn't talk about, getting in private investments that, pre-IPO, but those are for high, high net worth individuals. And it's a long process and it's not simple as putting in.
And you also don't get your money out.
Other stuff that you hear about, and then it's like liquidity events. And that's why if you are a shareholder, if you're one of these SpaceX employees or investor early on, that's what they also use this IPO as a time to monetize their earlier investment.
Did I see something where there's like 400 SpaceX employees that'll be worth like 100 million or 10 million.
Really?
Something like
wow.
that.
Well, two Lisa, more weeks we and out. Yeah.
Can you imagine that?
I was like, that is mind boggling.
It is, especially, I mean, you always heard about the Dellionaires back in the day, but it's probably the same. That wouldn't surprise me. I think, didn't we read it's like 70% of them will be million, 7% of the companies.
Yeah.
That's a big, imagine if you're just that Joel level entry level.
I mean, you hear about a lot of these massive companies, you know, the janitor at the company got paid in stock and all of a sudden, you know, the janitor's worth $5-10 million.
Yeah. I think it's exciting. That's why everybody's talking about it. So it's something we'll, and then let's quick talk about the kind of the business lines, right? SpaceX, what they do. Tyler, Lisa, I think you guys can jump in here. We got Starlink, right? Which is great. We got, you know, the launch system and XAI, a couple different businesses, but as a whole, let's talk about the revenue. So that's how we always like to put everything back in valuation. Again, it's great. It's investing. It's going to be exciting, but at the end of the day, we want companies that cash flow and have some relative multiple. And so that's why up until recently, we didn't know even what the revenues for the company were. And then, so revenues in 2025 were about $19 billion for the overall company, which is a little higher than I would have suspected. Yeah. But $19 billion, if you do, you know, that's $1.9 trillion, that's what, 100 times revenue multiple, just simple math. It's
pretty good.
That's not cheap. their adjusted EBITDA was $6.6 billion.
Just for the listeners, most companies trade between like 0.2x revenue to a software company might trade at 15, I'd say 20 times revenue.
In the heyday, they were getting 20, but now the most of them are probably that 7 to 9-ish.
And we're talking 100 times 100. Revenue.
That's same with like Tesla when they first came out. They were, so that's why I think people are comparing it to. The other thing we didn't talk about is you're investing with Musk. I think that's the big thing is he's a visionary, whether you like him or not. He changes industries and worlds. And that's, I think, a big part of this. And again, there's people that really love him and people that don't, but he does change
things. If you love him, you're a believer and you will hold Tesla, you'll probably hold SpaceX for the rest of your life.
Now, Starlink has got 10 million subscribers, which I remember. That's a big number.
That's a lot bigger than I expected because it's not cheap.
No, it's funny because I remember it's probably 5 years ago, the chairman of the company, he's got a place up north and there's no internet access. Yeah. And he came across this and absolutely loved it for his own personal use. So it's, you hear about those stories. Mm-hmm. And then if all these people that, if you don't have to build the infrastructure like you do for all this other stuff and you can get internet speeds that are fast and reliable, you can definitely see things going that way. Lisa, got anything to add on their business lines or what's interesting you? And then not even touch on XAI yet.
No, I mean, I'm not as familiar with Starlink personally, but I mean, everyone probably that took a flight probably experienced it because we have like Wi-Fi on flights now and that's all Starlink. Mm. That's all connected with. And I just remember like a little feud a couple of weeks ago with the Ryanair CEO.
Musk. Huh?
Yeah. Because I don't know, Musk wanted him to buy like Starlink for Ryanair and the Ryanair CEO, which is basically the Spirit, rest in peace, Spirit, the Spirit of Europe.
Yes, he is.
And basically their CEO said, you know what? We sell 16 euro flights to Mallorca. You know, no one is paying extra for having Starlink for a 2 hour flight. You know, we nearly charged like for them going to the bathroom in the flight. So what are we doing here? And then Musk like kind of bickered around that, oh, I'm buying the company and kind of throwing, it was a whole thing. And then Ryanair went back and did like a special on it when advertised the whole thing and whatnot. So, that was pretty funny, I thought, but, it really changes things, right? Starlink. I mean, when we think of remote areas, airplanes where we haven't had Wi-Fi so far, it works pretty well too. Then just areas of the world that just do not have access and all that. So it really changes a lot, I think, for people. So I think that only gets bigger and bigger.
Well, and Musk is a good marketer. So when Iran strikes first happened, they took out the communications. Yeah. So they didn't have internet. And so Elon being Elon put Starlink lined up. You could see him in the sky.
Mm-hmm.
There's a picture of him, just a straight line of Starlink satellites just sitting over Iran, trying to give them internet.
He did the same with Ukraine when did they first got in. Got
Ukraine, invaded, natural were, disasters. Yeah. You just think about it. Yeah. Anytime your communication goes out, it's just another.
Yeah.
Ukraine relatively. Has
the same, so all of a sudden, you look at that and you're like, oh, that's a must have.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Right?
Yeah.
I mean,
yeah, it's. You gotta
but it is expensive. So, like, a few of the people at my parents, the neighbors at my parents' cabin have it, and it is expensive.
Yeah, it's usually between 100 and 120 a month. Not yeah. cheap.
No. But like my Comcast internet bill is like $50.
Yeah.
Right. So you're talking about doubling, if not tripling your.
Yeah. But I mean, the pros and cons, right? If you're mobile and stuff and that tier, like maybe they have Starlink, you can use it. I don't know if it's a device you just bring to your home versus your cabin.
I think they have a device in their cabin.
Yeah. It's just like anything else.
Is it stationary or is it?
I don't know if they can use it like.
Or can I use it in their
maybe
real
that's
home
a different
too,
like
that's part of the service. Yeah, tiers. Just like anything. I assume that's what it is. You probably buy one device and then use it at your house. But then if you want to do mobile, just kind of how everything progresses. Yeah. And oh, by the way, now you're at $300. I thought it was at $100.
Right. Yeah.
So it's good.
Yeah.
Then XAI, right? It's exciting. So that's just recently part of the group. So I don't know.
There's a lot going on inside of SpaceX. It's not just the initial SpaceX business that it once was.
No, and that's why I think it's going to be exciting.
Is the Boring Company part of SpaceX?
I don't think it. I was just looking at. I don't know if that. Well, I thought it was.
Because they don't have any revenue. Boring Company doesn't have any revenue, I don't think, yet. But
no, I don't. From the documentation, I didn't see it in there, but I could be wrong on that. So that, again, that's why the stuff is just really coming out in the last few days.
What do you think of the whispers out there that Tesla might be merging with or be integrated with SpaceX once it's public? Do you think that complicates things? Because we have a lot of different things then in there. We have XAI, which is more like Grok and X, like Twitter and stuff. And then we have Starlink, and then we have, the actual rocket stuff and all of that. And now we have Tesla in it with electric cars and their robots and stuff.
Tesla is it stuff getting inside of it too.
Yeah. Tesla did the same thing with other companies in the past. Right. They basically, they but were hard to stand alone bit, and then they put them under their umbrella. So
like the solar company is in there.
But would it get a little bit too confusing or too, like, how do you value this even?
Probably a little bit, but I think investors look through it. And again, they look at investing with Musk and what the potential revenues are, and he does change stuff. Now, EVs, if you go back to the core competencies of Tesla was EV vehicles, and they're now losing market share. So it's weird, but he kind of definitely promotes.
There's plenty of companies that are, you would put SpaceX into the conglomerate category. Yeah. And the only bad part about doing that is conglomerates tend to get discounted.
Lower multiple.
From a pure play. So like if SpaceX was just a pure launch business, and if Starlink was a pure satellite business, their multiples are probably, now SpaceX is a bad example to use just because it's SpaceX and they're going for 100 times revenue. But traditionally, like if SpaceX were to split off Starlink, it would get just like if Alphabet split off Waymo would get a lot more credit as a standalone business than Alphabet actually gets credit for inside of Alphabet.
All right. Well, we'll leave it there because I think next week we'll probably end up touching on SpaceX right before the actual IPO as well. It's exciting times. So, all right, everyone, like and subscribe and see you next week.
Investing involves the risk of loss. This podcast is for informational purposes only and should not be regarded as personalized investment advice or relied upon for investment decisions. Jeremy Bryan, Tyler Eligard, Keith Gangle, Lisa Schreiber, and David Ama are employees of Gradient Investments, LLC, and may maintain positions in the securities discussed in this podcast. All opinions expressed by them and their guests are solely their own opinion and do not reflect the opinion of Gradient Investments, LLC. Please consult your independent investment advisor before making any investment decisions. The information herein is for informational purposes only and should not be used as the sole basis for making an investment decision. Investing involves risk, including the potential loss of principal. For more information, please request a copy of Gradient Investments, ADV Part 2A. Gradient Investments, LLC is an SEC registered investment advisor.